scaredy cats, it's a universally known truth that high school can be hell. That's a given, even if you don't have mass killers picking off your friends one by one. So let's break it down. There are those unbreakable social casts. There are those gut-wrenching, unrequited crushes that you just can't seem to talk to. There are teachers, parents who just don't understand you. And sometimes you don't even understand yourself. And maybe, just maybe, there are aliens taking over your school, hoping for world domination in just a short time. But what if all those sci-fi movies were trying to acclimate us to a world in which aliens were real? What if Steven Spielberg set us up because he's an alien? Well, strap on your backpack, put your best 90s mix into your Walkman, and get ready to head back to school. It's time to talk about the faculty.
From Kevin Williamson, the writer of Scream and Scream 2. From Robert Rodriguez, the director of From Dusk Till Dawn, comes a new science fiction thriller.
No more pencils, no more books, no more teachers' dirty looks.
The students at Harrington High have always suspected their teachers were from another planet.
Is this going to be on the test?
This is the test.
This time, they're right. Now, these six students won't just question authority. They'll have to destroy it. Critics are calling it hip and scary. A thrilling ride from beginning to end. The faculty.
Please report to the principal's office.
I'm your host, Sherry, and this is just your friendly reminder that, as always, we'll be breaking down the plot in great detail. That means there will be loads of spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie, proceed at your own risk. Joining the class today are Ariana, Crystal, and the new girl, Michelle.
Hey.
Michelle, can you prove you're not the alien queen?
Right now I can't, I guess. You just never know.
Quick.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to ship some drugs down there to you.
Yes.
And then we'll have to see.
Snort this trucker meth real quick and let's go.
So why don't you each take a second to introduce yourselves?
Sure. So I'm Ariana. I live in New York. I'm from California. I work in television. I love horror movies and true crime and cats. And as I was telling Sherry earlier, the newest thing in my life is that I just bought one of those cat wheels for my cats, like the crazy cat lady that I am. And they love it, which is the best thing ever. So I now have a giant sized hamster wheel designed for cats in my living room.
Well, I'm Michelle. I guess you heard that I'm the new girl, so first time on this podcast. I love all horror movies, true crime as well, reality trash shows. I'm a mom of a four-year-old, and I don't know. I just love all things that make me scared more than anything.
Awesome.
And I'm Crystal. I'm from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. I work for a trucking company. So speaking of all things that make you scared, recently the news in Canada has been a total nightmare. So dealing with that and just living and loving in Saskatoon, watching horror movies with my friend Michelle and my husband, and I have a dog, and everything's great and wonderful over here.
Awesome. And you two didn't talk about your podcast.
Michelle and I have a podcast where we recap and discuss Real Housewives news and episodes.
Amazing.
So if you're into reality trash, as we mentioned, we both are, we host the Real Housewives of Saskatoon. So please feel free to come by and check us out too.
Oh my God, that's so fun.
I still get a little bit like embarrassed, and I like sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, I can't believe Crystal and I are actually doing a podcast. But I think with every episode it gets more and more fun, and we get more comfortable, and it's just so much fun. I think during quarantine Crystal and I were trying to find ways to still connect, and that's something that we really had in common, so we're like, why not?
Yeah, you got to wear that with pride. You're talking about something you're passionate about, the friend. I mean, listen, it's great.
We're just a little shy, but yes, we love it.
So, Michelle, we're going to subject you to the Scaredy Cat 5 now. So these are just 5 questions to get to know you as a horror fan. Are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
Okay, what is your favorite subgenre of horror?
I love home invasion type movies. Those are my favorite because I find them so scary because it's something that could truly happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I love the most out of watching horror movies. I want something that is relatable that could actually happen, which I don't know, maybe that's kind of twisted in a way, but that is my absolute favorite. Like, and more like the psychological type thrillers that can really sit in your head for a long time.
Yeah, I think home invasions are, there are a couple horror movies that I cannot watch on my own, or I can't watch at night on my own. And home invasion is one of them. I'm like, I can't do it. I just can't do it. Jer either needs to be like in the room with me or in very close proximity to,
mm-hmm. to me. I love a home invasion because I'm always, you know, we're just like sitting there going like, no, don't do that. Do this like the whole time. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What is your favorite horror movie?
I really had to think about this kind of before coming on here. And when I think of my favorite movie and I think about like home invasion, I would have to say Funny Games, the original one, is my absolute favorite. Like that is just so well done. And yeah, there's like a couple things in that movie that couldn't really happen. Like there's a couple scenes where they do kind of like a rewind take, but overall it's absolutely just so frightening. And then on the flip side of something that's kind of just a hilarious watch is Nicolas Cage and Vampire's Kiss.
It's so insane.
It is so insane. And like when I first watch it, you know, I'm like, oh, this is funny. This guy's crazy. But as you get older, you kind of rewatch it and you're like, oh no, this is kind of like commentary of somebody having an actual like psychosis episode. Like, I don't know, but there's so many lines in that movie that are so funny. I love it.
What is the first horror movie you remember seeing?
Actually Scream. So I feel like I kind of came into the horror movie scene a little bit, maybe late. I was 10 years old and I watched Scream at a friend's house. I'd never seen anything remotely scary in my life. And honestly, Scream screwed me up for a while. Like I would have my light on all the time in my room. I didn't want to go in my basement. I like would go and sneak into my parents' bed and just like sleep on the floor, like in their room for so long. So I'm surprised where I've come now. Like it's just my favorite thing, but yeah, it scared the crap out of me.
That's a good first horror movie to remember seeing though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Who is your ultimate final girl?
Honestly, when I think of final girls, the ones that come to mind is always just Jamie Lee Curtis, like Laurie and Halloween. And then of course, like Neve Campbell. Yeah. I think Jamie Lee Curtis, like she's just such a badass bitch. Like I think about being in that same situation as her and I'm just like, oh hell no, like I would have given up so much sooner, but always the first one that comes to my mind.
Excellent choice. So how long would you last in a horror movie?
Not long. I am not physically fit and I have no sense of direction. So if I had to run anywhere and I didn't know where I was, I'd probably be running in circles and just run right back to the killer.
Well, maybe, are you a good hider though? Maybe you're a good hider.
No, probably not. I'm not very stealthy. I'm also very clumsy. As I already proved today with Crystal, I like stumbled over a table and poured my drink everywhere. So I'm not very subtle. And yeah, I think at first I would try so hard to be like, oh man, I'm a badass. I'm going to get this. I'm going to gouge his eyes out. But as soon as I got physically hurt at all, I'd just be like, I'm very badly hurt. I'm just gonna just give up.
Like, you guys go ahead. Just leave me here. Just
in my eulogy, don't say that I lit up the room every time I came in there.
Fair enough. Okay, so now let's talk about the faculty. So the letterbox summary, when some very creepy things start happening around school, the kids at Harrington High make a chilling discovery that confirms their worst suspicions. Their teachers really are from another planet. I know that two of you, this was your first watch of this movie.
Yep. My first time. I remember when it came out and I like really wanted to, like I wanted to see it, but I wasn't very into horror until like later in my life. So I think at the time I was like, that looks too scary. So it didn't, even though as you know, as we'll discuss, it definitely reminded me of Buffy. It was a very different kind of scary, than I thought it was, but, yeah, so it's brand new for me.
Michelle, this was your first watch as well. No, you've watched it before. You said, sorry, but you haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, like honestly, I remembered nothing about it. And honestly, I think probably a reason why I never rewatched it is, I hate to say this as we're recapping like a sci-fi movie, but normally I don't gravitate more to those like horror sci-fis, but I'm so glad that I had to rewatch it. Like it was great. There's always exceptions to that rule, but yeah, I loved it.
Crystal, did you see this when it came out?
Yes, because I watched everything and anything I could get my hands on that was horror related at that point in time. This one, I always felt like is a mix between like if Varsity Blues the Thing and Breakfast Club had a baby, which all three of these are great movies, but together it's just this mess that I love so much. But growing up, my dad kind of was a sci-fi guy. So like we watched, you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers and Invaders from Mars and like Children of the Damned and things like that. So I kind of felt like this movie had a little bit of that feel just because I think like Rodriguez and Williamson are kind of like movie dorks. So I definitely felt like they took from those and I could see that, but maybe that's why I liked it. Maybe it was Josh Hartnett. I don't know. But yes, loved it. Loved it then, loved it now.
Yeah, me too. I remember seeing it in the theaters. I think I saw it on Boxing Day, which is December 26th for those people that don't.
For those mark damn Boxing Americans.
I didn't want to say it, but yes. I'm pretty sure I saw it at the theater on the 26th. It was definitely over the Christmas holidays. And like, I loved it. But I hadn't seen it in a very long time. So this was like a really fun rewatch for me. As you mentioned, Crystal, it was directed by Robert Rodriguez, who had previously directed El Mariachi and From Dusk to Dawn. The screenplay was by Kevin Williamson, who we all know from Scream, I Know What You Did Last Summer, and Dawson's Creek. But originally, the screenplay was written by David Wechter and Bruce Kimmel. And in 1990, they sent it out. Nobody wanted to buy it. But then Scream became a big success. So Miramax bought the script. And we're like, let's get this into production. Kevin Williamson was brought in to do rewrites, basically keeping the story, like the bones of the story, but then rewriting the dialogue and adding new characters to make it, quote unquote, more hip. He was supposed to direct as well, but he was very busy with his directorial debut, teaching Mrs. Tingle.
I need to rewatch that movie too.
Yeah, I definitely meant to watch it, and I didn't get around to it before we were recording, unfortunately. But yeah, I'll have to check it out.
I've never seen it.
Me either.
It stars Jordana Brewster, Clea DuVall, Laura Harris, Josh Hartnett, Sean Hattissey, Famke Janssen, Piper Laurie, Bebe Neuwirth, Robert Patrick, Usher. I was hoping somebody was going to go, yeah, but.
Yeah.
That was like a few years after this.
He's quite a lyricist.
He definitely is. John Stewart and Elijah Wood.
What a cast. It's such a good cast.
It's such a stacked cast. And now some of them weren't very big at the time, but I mean, you've got John Stewart pre The Daily Show, Elijah Wood before Lord of the Rings. But after The Good Son. It was Jordana Brewster's film debut.
She'll always be Mia from Fast and the Furious to me.
Absolutely.
Always.
I've never seen a Fast and the Furious movie.
So. What?
How have you escaped them? They're everywhere.
You're not missing any.
When there's a new Fast and the Furious, it's like, it's my version of the Super Bowl. When there's a new Fast and the Furious, It's like, you know, you spend the entire day, you get several drinks, and probably ideally you get bottomless brunch if it's a weekend. And oh my god, they're so insane, but they're so much fun.
I'll check one out. I mean, there's like what, 99 of them now?
There's a thousand of them. But they don't start getting like really hitting their like tongue in cheek over the topness until I want to say 4. And no, you don't have to have seen any of the previous ones.
Okay,
to
perfect.
Watch the movie.
Excellent. was my next question.
It's not high concept. Okay.
What's going to happen now that The Rock and Vincent Diesel, as I like to call him, aren't getting along?
Vincent. Well, I mean, they did a new one without The Rock in it.
Oh, did they?
They've now spun off The Rock into
Hobbs and Shaw.
Hobbs and Shaw, exactly.
Oh.
With Jason Statham. So. Yeah, so The Rock's still, like, in the franchise world, but yeah, they're just not working together, because word has it they hate each other. Mm-hmm. So.
That's fair.
Did you guys ever have The Rock Clock?
What?
It was, like, an app that The Rock put out, and it was, like, a clock that would follow his daily routine. When The Rock gets up, your alarm would go off. When The Rock eats breakfast, he would let you know it's time to eat breakfast. When The Rock starts his 8-hour workout, he would let you know.
This is incredible.
Is this still?
I should probably get this.
Yeah.
I don't think it's still a thing, but it was at one time.
Oh my
BRB, I'm looking it up right now.
Let's DM him and ask him to bring it back, because I'm sure he would look at those DMs.
I will say one of my favorite things from the recent Scream movie, and this is not a spoiler, is one of the characters like basically calls his biceps Hobbs and Shaw. And I just thought it was hilarious.
No one is a lot smaller than the other.
That's a good point. So The Faculty takes place in the fictional town of Harrington, Ohio, but was actually shot mostly in Texas, Austin, San Marcos, Dallas, and Lockhart. The filming in Lockhart was done at the high school, and they actually used that school's football team. They had the city show up for the football game, and they were all given fake t-shirts to wear in the stands. And the score is composed by Marco Beltrami, who did the score for Scream, as well as Mimic. So I wanted to talk about the soundtrack a little bit, because as somebody who was a teenager and early 20s in the 90s, they could have picked much better songs for this soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I guess it depends what you're going for, but if you want it to be taken a little bit more seriously, I guess, or kind of have a little bit more of those like really scary scenes, like that's not what that score was about. But I did love, like, it went on for too long, but the beginning, just like The Offspring, I'm like, well, this is totally me in high school. Like,
yeah, I felt like it opened so strong. And then the other songs they picked, it was like, well, I'm not paying for this CD to rock out to.
My- yeah, 100%. Yeah, that opening song was great. And then it just sort of declined from there.
That cover of Another Brick in the Wall by, I think, the alleged supergroup Class of 99.
Wow.
It's so bad. So bad. So the movie was released on December 25th, 1998. The budget was $15 million and box office $63.2 million. Wasn't a huge hit, really, although $63.2 million is still nothing to sneeze at. But it's really, I feel like it's become more of a cult classic in the last few years. So if you look at some of the reviews, Variety said, results may not be Nobel Prize material, but they're zesty and cogent. Williamson playfully includes subversive narrative elements, at once pro-recreational drug, pro-scholastic, and anti-homophobic, when not paying key homage to The Breakfast Club, as well as myriad horror/sci-fi classics. As usual, the dialogue is bright, although it is so of the moment, it should carry an expiration date. For his part, Helmer editor Rodriguez delivers another hyper-confident, feature-length adrenaline rush, albeit one thankfully freed from the more irksome macho iconotry fixations of his prior studio projects. The New York Times called it a mediocre sci-fi horror film, but does say that they had an engaging cast with half a dozen appealing young actors playing the roles of teenagers who are all that stand between the Midwestern monsters and the end of the world as certain moviegoers know it. And then Time Out said Rodriguez opts for a slow buildup using John Carpenter-style framing and fluid camera movements to generate creepy suspense before pushing in to engage with the threatened teens.
Yeah, it was it like this whole thing was so the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the thing. And I like, so yeah, very, very John Carpenter-esque.
Yes. The movie opens on a football field. As we've mentioned, there's some classic 90s riffage courtesy of The Offspring playing over it. And we're at football practice. It is not going well for Stan, who is played by Sean Hadassie. His coach, played by Robert Patrick, who I think is my favorite in this movie.
Oh, T-1000 himself.
Definitely the Terminator.
Oh, my God.
T2 or whatever, yeah.
He is not impressed with the whole team's performance, but he singles Stan out. Luckily, Stan has a good friend in Gabe, a.k.a. Usher, who manages to hold him back. Thank you. But the coach has a bit of a tantrum. He's, like, taking it on one of the sprinklers in the field, and then he's approached from behind by a mystery character, so we don't see this person. And he doesn't seem to be too concerned. So clearly, this person isn't perceived as much of a threat, because he just says, yeah, what, before the screen fades to black.
Also, like, trying to stop the flow of water from the sprinkler with your hand. He wasn't, like, trying to fix it or anything. I was just like, just go take a breath. Take a time out. Yeah. Shower, T-1000.
I think the thing that I loved most about this movie is Robert Patrick. Like, I honestly think he was just having so much fun playing this role. He does it so well. It was my favorite thing.
I agree. Yeah, he's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's that one scene later on where he's almost at the end of the movie, and we'll talk about it later, but when he is watching the carnage that's basically playing out on the field.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the look on his face, he's just like eating it up. He loves it. So the school day continues for some of the teachers and the principal, who are having a little staff meeting. And we meet Principal Drake. She gets her name from the Drake equation, which apparently is used to estimate how much intelligent life there is in the universe. We learn that pretty much all of the school's extra money goes to the football team, much to the chagrin of the other teachers who want money for a trip to New York, or the drama club's production of Guys and Dolls, or, you know, new computers.
Phoebe Newworth is such a babe in this movie.
Oh my gosh, she's stunning.
A babe anyway, but I'm obsessed with her for like all of her Broadway credits and stuff, but she's divine.
You're right. I was used to seeing her as Lilith Crane, like a lot more buttoned up.
Yeah, she's divine in this.
Okay, so what is the deal with high school football in the States? Because maybe it's the same in Saskatoon. It's not like that here at all.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, because my school was definitely similar to this. It's not. Yeah. Okay. First of all, the town loves it. The community loves it. I could not give a shit about sports ever. I was the one that was like, give drama club the money. but the other thing is, like, from a just like purely business standpoint, it's also what's bringing in the money to the schools.
For sure.
So like that, it's like, not only is it popular, but also like people are, you've got these huge booster organizations, you know, powered by the moms that don't like, that are usually like stay at home moms that just want to help their kid raise money for their sports team. And then you have, you know, usually it's volunteers that run the snack cart, so like you're getting lots of money from that, and then you're getting money from ticket sales and like getting in and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, so it's like it's really the only place, one of the only places that the school is going to make any money, which is also why it gets lots of money when money does come in. So that's it. But people love it. Like, small towns like love that shit. They like, they have their rivalries with other schools, and you have like these like generations of people that like their parents went to the same high school, and their parents went to the same high school, and their parents went to the same high school, and like this high school doesn't like this high school, and they're playing tonight, and you know, and people just get really into it.
I guess also when it's a small town, there might not be too much else to do on a
Friday. Oh yeah, there's not much to do. Exactly. Right. Our town was like, it was like life-changing when they got an Applebee's. And like when I was like a sophomore in college, or sorry, in high school, they got an Applebee's and it was like the biggest thing that had ever happened to us. So yeah. So yeah, football games sound really good. I hated football and I still went to football games on every Friday night.
Yeah, like definitely we don't have so much of that vibe in Saskatoon where it's like the whole city comes out and like all the adults come out and whatever. Like definitely the parents of who was playing did. But I do remember like being a student in high school, we would still like go and watch some of the games sometimes. I only went to a couple because it wasn't really my thing. But yeah, when I watch these movies, I'm just like, I can't relate to that because I didn't feel like any of our schools in Saskatoon was like, this is our end-all be-all sport. Right. And also just like, I don't also remember it ever being like a, oh, the quarterback has to date the lead, like cheerleader. We didn't have that dynamic, I don't think, in our high school. But
I think we had a little bit of that in our high school, but it was not maybe as rigid as it seems like in this school.
I think with us, it was more like we didn't have like a school hockey team, but I think it was more like, and this is going to sound like sexist and bad, but it was like the guys, the hockey team, and a lot of girls were kind of really into them, and they would call them like the puck bunnies. And it was so bad to like think back on that, but that was what was big in our school, is the hockey guys and the hockey hair.
Yeah, no, we definitely had the cheerleaders that dated the football, you know, like the jocks and whatever. We definitely had that kind of stuff. Our school was small though, so it's like everybody had gone to school together for years at that point. So like while there were like definitely like social cliques, like everyone else was also like pretty nice to everyone else because we'd all kind of grown up together.
We didn't even have cheerleaders.
Oh, really? You didn't?
No, we didn't.
That's crazy. I don't even know what to say now, Crystal.
Sorry. Yeah.
Did you have sports?
We had sports, but we didn't have cheerleading.
But how did they know to be cheerful?
I don't know. No one. I guess we had to make our own cheer. And,
okay. Does that mean that you guys didn't even have pep rallies?
That's what my follow-up question was going to be.
Yeah, we had pep
rallies. Who pepped you up at the pep rally? Who gave you the pep?
Yeah.
I don't remember. People.
Was it like the band? Did you have like a color guard?
No color guard. No. But we would have like a band, and then like I feel like members of the team would speak, or like the coaches would speak, and people were like would cheer and like be excited. And I feel like I went to football. This was a long time ago, but I feel like I went to football games. I don't really remember. But yeah, we never had cheerleaders, and maybe they do now, but not then.
Did you have a mascot?
No mascot. I mean, I went to a Catholic school, so our like, you know how the Harrington High had like the Hornets?
Yeah.
Ours was like St. Joseph, like the guardian. So like not
that
as
that might
sexy.
Be why you didn't have
cheerleaders. No one, there's no one dressed up as Joseph doing cartwheels. Like there's none of that.
Now I'm just picturing that. Like
yeah, no, nothing like that at my school.
Wow.
I'm picturing, like, if you did, even though this isn't Catholic, I just keep picturing now if you did have a cheerleading squad, they'd be dressed more like Mormons, like, completely just, like, buttoned up and, like, no skirts, long, like, more so long dresses. And
just bring in a van full of Amish to the pep rally. Like,
oh, my gosh. As they all leave, the principal realizes that she has forgot her keys, and so she has to go back into the school. And she's walking back through this very dark school hallway. And all I could think was, turn on a light. Like, I know she doesn't go far, and a light wouldn't have saved her, but just turn on a light.
Yeah.
Actually, the other day, I live in an apartment. I live on the ninth floor. And they were doing work on our electrical panels, like, throughout the building. So the power was out all morning, and I had to leave for work. And so we walk out into our hallway, and the hallway was pitch black, other than like one emergency light at one end of the hall and one emergency light at the other end of the hall. And I was like, I've entered a horror movie. I'm in a horror movie right now, and I'm going to die.
Run.
Yeah. But then I trip and I would die anyways. So she heads to her office, and she hears some kind of sound before she is startled by Coach Willis. And he's very creepy telling her, you look very pretty, before saying he can't find a pencil.
Yeah, it's like, it's bad. But the thing is, the thing that kills me, though, is it seems like she's used to him being a fucking creep.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem like she's surprised that he's acting.
And then, like, alluding to, like, him possibly being drunk when she's like, oh, let's sleep it off. Like, how often is he at school drunk?
Right.
Yes. And, like, she says that thing, too, about, like, you know, harassment is – I can't think of what she says, but she's basically, like, harassment isn't acceptable. But she says it so calmly. Again, like, this is something that's happened before.
Right.
So she rebuffs him, but he persists until finally she hands him a pencil. And she's clearly been diligently sharpening her pencil supply because he manages to stab it right through the palm of her hand.
Ugh. And in this moment, it like you said, the guy who did the score did scream too. So there was that like, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep. Can you repeat that? I didn't catch that.
That one. Okay.
There we go.
When that scene happened, and Crystal can contest to this since I watched it with her, I was like, I did not expect that. Like, stabbing her with a pencil, like, that surprised me.
I loved their whole exchange beforehand where he's like, do you have a pencil? And she's like, yeah, I have a goddamn pencil. Like, fuck's sake.
I can't do the impression, maybe Crystal can, but the scene just with the pencil just reminded me of King of the Hill when Peggy's doing Boggle. And it's like she's down.
She's down to her last pencil.
Yeah. No more pencils in reserve.
Oh my God, Michelle, you cracked me up.
Yeah, George and I definitely jumped from that.
Yeah. Crystal, I always love your impressions. When
you oh no, I'm on. Sorry.
No, I'm not. I'm serious. He says he's always wanted to do that too, which, like, I'm like, you're such a jerk. Like, you've always wanted to do that. Fuck you, Robert Patrick. But she fights back. She's got her keys in her hand. She slashes him across the face before running to various doors, only to find them all locked.
Presumably in heels, and she's booking it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't wipe out like Elijah Wood does later on in the movie. He then goes and taunts her over the PA system before chasing after her while blowing his gym whistle.
Oh my God, that part was terrifying to me with the whistle.
Yeah. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, however, or the hallway, in the form of Mrs. Olson, the drama teacher, who is on the other side of one of the locked doors. So Principal Drake gets to the door. She's like, oh my God, I don't have my keys. And Mrs. Olson doesn't have hers, so Principal Drake has to run back to the office, leaving Mrs. Olson behind, scared and alone. And she's like a little old lady. She's no longer the Piper Laurie of Carrie, which she played Margaret White. Like, she's an older lady now. She looks terrified. I don't know why her being older has anything to do with it. It's like
she's more frail, more vulnerable.
She does look frail and vulnerable. That's a perfect way of putting it.
She knows she can't run in heels that well, so.
That's true. The principal manages to get her keys before hearing Mrs. Olson cry out that he's coming. And we see the coach standing at the end of the hallway, just looking absolutely menacing. He's got blood on the side of his face that he kind of touches before he begins to run after the principal. Terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely terrifying. When she gets to the door, she manages to make it outside where she rechains the door and locks him inside. But she turns to face Mrs. Olson, who has this creepy blank look on her face. And then Mrs. Olson takes scissors and slashes at her while the coach looks on through the window.
Who locked all the doors?
Did anyone clock that she was, did everyone think that she was evil before you saw her pick up the razor?
No. Scissors? Honestly, this opening, like, surprised me. I loved it. But also, I was saying to Crystal when we're watching them trying to unlock the school doors, I was like, who locks up a school like this? Like, why do they have a chain lock?
I just assumed it was the coach.
Oh. Well, I would think it was, like, a maintenance guy or, like, someone's there after hours to clean the school. So, like, meanwhile, there's some poor little janitor just emptying garbage cans while all this is going on.
He's like, I'm not
rocking out to his Walkman.
Yeah. No, I don't get paid enough to help out here.
Did you clock it? Did you think that she was evil?
I was suspicious, but it's only because I'm always suspicious. the second I was like, well, the other thing that pisses me off was like, Bebe Neuwirth is a tiny fucking person. The gap in that fucking door was definitely wide enough for her to get her little tiny body through the first time around. She's like a very petite, and it was huge. It was like she was sticking her whole head through there. And I was like, if you can get your head through, you can probably get the rest of your body through. Like,
that's probably true.
And then she was like, my keys. And I'm like, just suck it in and squeeze it through. Let's go.
It's not like she was wearing a big parka that would get in the way.
Right. Well, and the thing about the drama teacher being evil, I think it's mostly my years of watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer where I was like, oh, well, if she's there and she's a teacher, she's probably already evil. Like, I was like,
it's in the title.
Yeah. And like, I can't remember though, like, had they like glammed her up yet for this? Cause like all the teachers got like extra glam once they got to be evil. So
no, she has not yet been yassified.
Speaking of Buffy, I think I read that they actually wanted Sarah Michelle Gellar to play a character and she turned it down.
Oh my god, I would have loved it.
Yeah, I did hear that. And then Charisma Carpenter, they wanted for Jordana Brewster's part.
Yeah, oh, but she turned it down because it was too similar to Cordelia, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is very similar.
Oh, Charisma would have been amazing.
I mean, she's so amazing and so beautiful.
I think I would have, because every time I talk about Delilah, my note afterwards is the worst. And I think I would have enjoyed her more if she were played by Charisma Carpenter.
I think so too. She's a lot funnier, right? She has better comedic timing. Yeah. And like, yeah, that would have been, I think, more fun.
She's more charming. She's more charming. Like, I don't think that Delilah was very likable
or memorable.
Like, and I couldn't like pinpoint what it was other than I just like didn't like her character.
Because she had no redeeming quality. She was a bitch the whole time. She was never fun.
My other question, and I've written this so many times, is was this when so-and-so was infected? When was so-and-so infected? Yes. And right. So that kind of like with Mrs. Olsen, like same thing. I'm like, was she already infected? But then
I don't think so.
Who would have infected her?
Well, spoiler alert, but I feel like the queen might have been hanging around because she had just infected the coach, right?
That's a very good point. She also echoes the coach's words when she says, I always wanted to do that, when she slashes at the principal with scissors. Why did they hate her so much? So then we see the title card before we transition to daylight and students are arriving back at school. We're soon going to meet the 90s sci-fi horror version of The Breakfast Club. So first up, we meet Zeke, who races into the parking lot in his 1970 Pontiac GTO. He is a very diligent student, apparently, and he's just stuffing his pockets full of what appear to be pens, because what else could they be?
Trucker mess.
Then we have Casey, the nerdy kid with a penchant for photography, who apologizes when his face collides with someone else's elbow. And this is where I'm going to admit that when I was younger, I always thought that Elijah Wood was way cuter than Josh Hartnett.
Really?
What? Probably because I was the nerdy kid.
I think I agree with you. Yeah. I don't think that I like ever had a thing. I know he was like such a big deal, especially when, what was that? Pearl Harbor came out. He was like the heartthrob. Mm-hmm. And I was like, he's pretty fine, but like, I don't really get it. But Elijah Wood, I definitely remember feeling like Elijah Wood was such a babe.
Mm-hmm. It's those eyes.
Yeah. He's gorgeous. And his skin in this movie too. I'm like, he looks like a newborn baby.
He's doing, you got to know glowing. He's doing that like 14 step Korean skincare, method.
It's glowing.
It's like perfect. It's like perfectly porcelain, no pores. That asshole.
I was reading that Rodriguez really liked Elijah Wood for his eyes because he found them kind of creepy. And then that's why he cast him in Sin City.
Oh,
that tracks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he was probably the creepiest character in Sin City.
Oh, absolutely.
And then we have Stokely, who is the misunderstood goth girl with a love of science fiction novels. And she is the queen of snarky comments like crash and burn, Casey.
Loved that line. Loved her. Wanted to be her.
And then she asks Stan, who is the unfulfilled jock, walk much when they bump into each other.
And then he says, "You ran into me, beast," which I also loved.
Stan is dating Delilah, the popular girl, editor of the school paper, and fashion advisor to the cheerleaders. So my last question, not my last question, I'm sure I'm going to ask more, but which one of these people were you most like in high school?
Clea DuVall's character, I would say. She's my true aesthetic of like goth, weird girl, sarcastic, like, yeah, sarcastic, snarky.
Yeah, she walked so that Julia Stiles' character could run in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yes.
For sure. I was like, who was I in high school? I was like the really like annoying, overachieving choir and theater kid. So like, I don't know if I was any of them, but just obnoxious, probably overly obnoxious. and I don't know. I have to, like, I have straight A's, but could they be A pluses? I was a fucking lunatic.
Oh, that was me. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, not really relating to any of these characters. I was kind of an underachiever, but like kind of a nerd, but probably dressed like Zeke. Mm. Like all of my clothes came from Randy River.
Oh man, same. I had those like parachute type pants and I had them in like neon orange. And I thought I was just so cool. And like looking back, I wish I had a picture of that because it was just horrendous. Like, what was I
like thinking? A lot of cargo, a lot of like shirts with flames and or dragons.
Oh no.
Like, oh, I remember belts, that phase. Oh like, yeah.
Belts with actual like seat belts as like the snap.
When we thought like the height of like fashion was those like barbed wire temporary tattoos.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
And chokers.
Yeah. Chokers.
And chokers. Yes.
I would like wear like a long sleeve shirt under a short sleeve shirt with a cargo pant and a puka shell just to finish it off. Just to tie it together.
The puka shells.
I'm not going to lie. A good choker. Like, I still like a good choker.
I still love a good choker.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Of all the trends I didn't think I would see again, the choker came back.
I saw a TikTok the other day, and it was somebody talking about their daughter making fun of her style when she's like, excuse me, you're mimicking my 90s aesthetic, so...
Yeah.
Yes. I saw a how-to on TikTok and it was like how to part your hair, that like zigzag part.
We were talking about that. Michelle and I were like, is that going to come back? Is that what's
next? I was like, that is not back. Come on.
Don't do it, kids. Say no to zigzags.
I can't even get into the whole like part in the middle thing that's going on. I'm a side,
oh, no,
side
me
part.
I'm a side part for life.
Yes.
I can't fuck with that.
I parted my hair in the middle the one day, and I have like short, like blonde, like dyed blonde hair, and I sent it to Crystal, and I was like, "Why do I look like Nick Carter?" It was so bad.
Oh my god. Way cuter than Nick Carter.
There you go. I think I would have been a cross between Casey and Stokely. Like, I was very nerdy, but I also was like the one that liked to read a lot of like science fiction and horror and stuff like that. So
yeah.
And I wanted to be like a goth girl, but I definitely wasn't.
Yeah.
My 1998 aesthetic was, and I'm going to apologize for laughing at Randy River when I share this, but I wore old man polyester plaid pants.
100%,
like my favorite pair was, they were beige with like red and blue plaid on them. And then I would wear old man like button up shirts and sometimes a sweater vest over top.
Oh,
gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was good.
Yeah.
And then I would wear band shirts. That was the other thing. Band shirts with cardigans were my big thing.
Yeah. Old man pants from like Value Village. I remember my friend Andrea had this pair of like brown ones that she like lived in and she called them her bus driver pants.
I had bus driver pants too. I'm guessing Randy River isn't in the States.
Could you tell that I had no idea what you guys were talking about?
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I didn't want to be like, what's that? explain it to the American.
Yeah. Break it down for the Americans. What was Randy River?
It was a men's store. So naturally 16-year-old me shopped at the men's store And it was basically if Guy Fieri designed designed clothes for Limp Bizkit.
Yes.
That's the best description of anything I've ever heard in my life.
That is okay, so spot on.
So picture that, and that would be Randy River.
Oh my God, I love it.
Oh my God. Okay. Amazing. Delilah rebuffs Stan's attempt to kiss her, saying, "These are Estee Lauder lips. They take 72 minutes to apply." I don't think I've taken 72 minutes in my whole life to put on makeup.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Just say you don't want to kiss him. Like, just end it.
Stan wants to talk, but Delilah is too busy, and she's so dismissive of him because she is, and this is the first time it appears, the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We see Casey getting rammed into a flagpole, like very violently. Like,
yeah, that's hard to watch.
Mm-hmm. And we see this blonde girl watching, wincing before asking some fellow students where the office is. And this is Mary Beth.
Mary Beth Hutchinson from Atlanta.
The student that wordlessly gestures in response to where is the office, that's actually Robert Rodriguez's sister.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw her, I was like, Crystal, I need to get that, like, I have a nose ring. I need to get that chain, like.
Mary Beth comes across as so sweet and innocent. And then we see this random fighting couple that we will see throughout the movie, and they are violently fighting. Like, she is attacking him, basically.
I love that in the credits they are fuck you girl and fuck you boy.
Are they? I didn't even notice that. Oh, brilliant. Zeke gets his first glimpse of Mary Beth before he attends to some business in the washroom. And his business is selling his drug, scat, aka trucker meth, and fake IDs to students. But I mean, he has other businesses as well.
You're going to name a drug scat?
Yeah. What on earth?
Like, here's my new street drug. Poop. Like, what? Like, no.
What if every time he sold some, he started actually scatting?
Like jazz scatting? Yeah. That's amazing.
That would have made a different movie.
Yeah. Missed opportunity. On the other side of the bathroom stall is poor Casey, who is dealing with the bloody aftermath of his early morning torture. Meanwhile, in the teacher's lounge, the teachers are gathering for gossip, first aid, and water, which seems like an odd beverage for them to drink first thing in the morning. But we do meet some new teachers in this scene. So we have the science teacher, Mr. Edward Furlong, which I love is a Terminator reference because Edward Furlong was in Terminator. Was he in Terminator or Terminator 2?
2.
We have English teacher Miss Elizabeth Burke and nurse Rosa Harper. Mr. Furlong is attempting to flirt with the nurse, which seems like a longstanding thing, but he gets absolutely nowhere, commenting, "Maybe I should just put a pen in my eye."
Jesus.
Which is delicious foreshadowing.
Oh my God.
And the only two teachers who seem to be affected so far are the coach and the drama teacher, Mrs. Olson. We don't see the principal anywhere. And one thing we'll see throughout the movie, and we kind of already talked about it, is the like the glow up or the glamification of the infected teachers.
Yeah, I wrote yesified.
Yeah, exactly. And we get a glimpse of it here with the coach commenting on how pretty Mrs. Olson looks. And she is definitely looking a lot more polished than she was the night before. And we'll see it again with Miss Burke, who currently is, she's all cardiganed up. She's wearing glasses because, you know, you can't be pretty with glasses.
If obviously. She's all that has taught us anything.
That's exactly what I was going to reference. And messy hair. Her hair is just like all over the place. She's also very timid in class. At one point, she actually looks like she could cry when no one responds to her question about Robinson Crusoe. The whole thing with Zeke and Miss Burke is really creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Like, she definitely has a thing for him, which we see a lot more later on. But she also, like, is very like, oh, that's very insightful, Zeke. Because Zeke is a man of layers and is actually a very, very smart young man.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate his side hustle. Like, I know it's not a very good, like.
No, I love
he's
it.
He's an entrepreneur.
But he was a hard working man. He knew how to make that dough.
But, like, why was he held back? Is my question. If he's so smart.
He didn't apply himself. Yeah.
Well, neither did I, and I squeaked through. But also about Zeke, if you're selling drugs out of your trunk, he brings like a lot of attention onto himself to like the staff. And like that's even true. His whole entrance into the school, like peeling into the parking lot, taking up three spaces.
Clearly, he's very conspicuous.
Very.
He's not like doing it on the lowdown. He's like, yeah, it makes me think that like he maybe has sold to some parents, some teachers or whatever before, so that like he probably doesn't have to worry too much about getting in trouble. But that's purely conjecture. That's what I would do at least.
Between classes, Stan tells Delilah that he is quitting football and she is unimpressed because she says, you know, there's a pecking order and the head cheerleader goes out with the quarterback. He wants to think about his future. He's over being a jock. He's like, I want to like actually, you know, study and focus on getting into university. And she's like, when you're done with your yellow brick road quest for a brain.
Ugh, again, the worst.
She's terrible.
Yeah, she's the, yeah, she's bad. I don't get why anyone likes her.
No. But can we just talk about how amazing Charisma Carpenter would have delivered that line?
Mm-hmm. So good. I mean, because even when Charisma was a total bitch, really, right at the beginning, before she had any character growth at mm-hmm. all, you still, like, liked her, you right. know? Like, she was still, like, funny and, like, interesting to watch and, like, even if she was, like, evil.
Yeah, she definitely brought a little more flavor.
In history class, Mr. Tate performs the role that every teacher in a horror movie featuring a school does. He shares a lesson that echoes the movie and says, only through conformity among the masses can the unified state offer the benefits of power, order, and security. But he's actually reading from the wrong chapter, which is delightful. And Stan's like, we actually covered that last week. At lunch, Mary Beth approaches Stokely, who is reading Double Star by American sci-fi writer Robert Heinlein. And she makes some comments about sci-fi, saying she's pretty alien herself. before introducing herself, as she always does, by her full name, Mary Beth Louise Hutchinson. So she says she comes from Atlanta. She speaks with a Southern accent. But in real life, the actress is actually Canadian.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's your CanCon content for the day. Delilah comes over and is once again the worst. But again, because we're going to talk about Buffy a lot, it reminds me of the first episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer when Cordelia tries to win right. Buffy over to her side, basically 100%. Telling her not to befriend the wrong people. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly that. That is that exact scene.
Which I can't see Willow ever saying, fuck you, gutter slut, to Cordelia, but
I mean, but wouldn't it be great if she had?
Oh, that would be amazing. Delilah comes back with some homophobic rhetoric, once again proving that she's the worst. That's the last time I'm going to say it. I think I've said it enough that people get it. I think she's the worst. Casey finds something unusual on the football field after eating his lunch, but he has a bit of a run-in with the coach, who just, again, comes off as menacing. And Elijah Wood has one of my favorite lines in the movie, and it's probably a line that I've quoted fairly often in my life, when he says, I don't think a person should run unless he's being chased.
Where's the lie?
It's true. It's true.
I don't really. I don't want no shin splints if I can avoid that.
Exactly. And we will see him run quite a lot in the movie, which is kind of ironic. So poor Mrs. Brummel, she is the older teacher. She just wants new computers for her lab, but she is the next victim. And Stokely sees Mrs. Olson enter Mrs. Brummel's classroom before turning around to shut the door with a very unsettling look on her face. Casey, meanwhile, takes his slimy little friend to Mr. Slimy little friend. I actually wrote find, but friend works too. To
Mr. Furlong. I said it looked like a dried apricot.
Mm-hmm. It kind of does. Oh, yeah. And Mary Beth continues to try to build a relationship with Stokely. Her attempts to get Stokely to fly free are so cringy. I've never met a lesbian before. Oh. Beat out. Fly free. That's a terrible Georgian accent. I apologize to anyone who is Georgian.
So is Mary Beth Hutchinson, so it's okay.
So Mr. Furlong is examining the specimen under a microscope, and a whole bunch of students have gathered around. So this is John Stewart. So he says that it's a sea-dwelling organism, and he thinks that Casey may have discovered a new species. Also a little weird that there's a sea-dwelling organism in Ohio, but they don't have any need for alarm.
Yeah, I mean, also, John Stewart looks awful in this movie.
I thought the same. Like, I think he's such a silver fox now.
Yeah. He's very, he's an attractive man, and he looked just like ill. Like, I don't know if that was on purpose or if that was just like before the Hollywood money started coming in and, you know, he had like tans and skincare and a trainer, but like, he looked, I wanted to be like, are you okay? Like, do you need help?
Once again, we're reminded that there's more to Zeke than we may have initially thought because he weighs in about, could it be this? Or like, is it this? Which impresses Mary Beth. Mr. Furlong decides they need to call the university and get them to take a look. But when Usher, aka Gabe, and Stokely have a little shoving match, some water gets splashed on the dried apricot and it comes back to life.
Stokely supplying the hardest comeback to Usher, saying, blow me blood fart.
There are some good comebacks in this movie.
Pardon me, blood fart.
Yeah.
Anyway, I couldn't let that pass without bringing you up.
I want an excuse to use that in real life now.
let us know.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
Please do. So they put it in the empty aquarium that just happens to be in the classroom. And by empty, I mean there's water in the aquarium. There's just no other fish in the aquarium, which is probably a good thing. Because this little guy is in his glory. Like, he's got his tendrils out. He's waving them around. Mr. Furlong, being a man of science, decides to slap on a glove and give the thing a little feel, which seems like a very bad idea.
Terrible idea.
Isn't that like science 101? Like, when you don't know what it is, don't just put your finger near it. Like, I don't know.
Especially not near its mouth.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
And it splits into two slippery little things. There's now two of them. One of them bares its teeth, and those little teeth look razor sharp. And it's weird the way it does it, because it's like they're these little needles that go into its mouth and then pull its mouth back and bare the teeth. If my voice sounded weird, it's because I was doing that to my mouth while I was some reason, because people can see me, apparently. But it goes right for his finger, and he ends up with a bloody, bloody finger. So definitely time to call the university and figure out what's going on. But it's also time for Stan to tell the coach that he's quitting the team. Now, if I were Stan, I'd be a little nervous telling Robert Patrick that I was quitting the football team after seeing his tantrum in the very first scene of the movie. But the coach takes it a lot better than Stan clearly expected, telling him, you seem to be going through some life-defining turning point. And he's like, what kind of a human being would I be if I stood in the way of that?
Yeah.
And when he smiles at Stan, it is off-putting.
That's going to live in my head rent-free. Like, I'm just going to randomly get a flash of that when I'm trying to sleep.
Stan heads to the showers after coming to Casey's rescue in the locker room. And this is where things really start to fall apart. He hears someone enter the room, but because his eyes are closed, he's washing his face, he doesn't see who has entered the room. He thinks it's Casey, but it is not Casey because those are some gnarly old feet walking towards him.
The feet.
It is Mrs. Brummel, who is clearly in distress. She says she can't breathe. She has open lesions on her face and just overall not in good shape. She tells Stan to let them know what's happening, that they want everyone. And Stan awkwardly holds her. And then he puts his hand to her head and pulls away a wad of her hair and skin.
Poor Stan.
I would lose it. Like, I have this thing about hair. I won't get into it, but... Oh my God, that would be my worst nightmare. And this scene also, like, Crystal and I were talking about, like, looking back at high school, like, how problematic was it that they forced guys to, like, shower together all the time? And if you didn't shower, you'd be, like, made fun of. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, also, if you didn't shower, you just reek the rest of the day.
True.
Like, you're not going to have second period PE and not shower if you're like a teenage boy. You're disgusting. Like, yeah. True. You could stink us all out of a whole classroom.
Yeah. I just think that I would feel so, and maybe, I don't know, maybe they were totally comfortable with it. I just feel like I couldn't shower in front of a bunch of women because I'm not that comfortable with myself.
Oh, Jesus, I'll get naked at the drop of the hat, so. maybe not in high school, but I mean, like, we had a swimming pool at our high school. So there were at least some times where we needed to like actually shower, like after PE or whatever. And I felt like it was fine. I don't know. Everyone in high school is so concerned about themselves. No one's looking at you, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Everyone's so worried about what their own bodies are doing and looking like. Like, no one's really going to care.
That's true.
But I say that all without ever having been a boy in a boy's locker room. So yeah. I don't know about that. That could be way worse.
This also gave me like Shining vibes with the ghost in the bathroom. And then she starts to ooze all over.
Yeah, totally.
So Stan and Casey then talk to Mrs. Olson after this traumatic experience. And she's like, I'm really sorry. Mrs. Brummel has cancer. The disorientation is from her medication. Casey, meanwhile, is looking out the window as she's talking. And he sees the coach standing outside in the field. And he's just standing still as these sprinklers that he earlier hated just douse him with water.
This is my favorite scene in the whole movie. Can you imagine being the person seeing that? Like just looking out your school window? That would be my worst nightmare.
Something's wrong with that guy.
Yeah, he's not normal. Zeke, meanwhile, is selling videotapes to some other students of Jennifer Love Hewitt and Nev Campbell in what he calls a party of prettiness. I also love the little joke that references the stars of Kevin Williamson's two blockbuster movies, Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, yeah.
Miss Burke comes over and she really tries to discourage him from conducting business on school property. He attempts to give her laxatives and condoms, but she's just exasperated with him and recognizes that he's a smart kid if only he would apply himself. Delilah and Casey are talking about the next issue of the paper. And Casey says, we should feature my new discovery. But Delilah is like, no. I will say that when she tells Casey that he's the geeky Stephen King kid, I felt that. I was like, yeah, that was me.
But also, who is she? She's the one, like, pushing the school newspaper that I'm sure no one gives a shit about. Like, why do you think that you're so much cooler than him?
It's literally just because she's pretty.
Yeah.
That's all it is. But yeah, no, I agree. Like, it's like, what do you bring to the table, bitch? Like, nothing. Yeah,
nobody gives a shit about your paper.
So they're doing the walk and talk, and we see a delivery guy walk by with jugs of water. Like, so much water. So they proceed to sneak into the teacher's lounge to look for something they can cover in the paper. And this is where we learn that Casey has a little bit of a crush on Delilah, even though she's a terrible human being. They hear Mrs. Olson and Coach Wilson entering the room, so they quickly hide in a closet. The coach and Mrs. Olson immediately head to the water cooler, and Coach Willis is just guzzling water, but Mrs. Olson throws it in her face.
Oh, her beautiful makeup.
Do each of these aliens, like, have to take the water in a different manner? Like, is that...
just absorb it through the skin?
Although I guess we see him doing that when he's standing out in the sprinkler, so I get...
Yeah.
We learn that Mrs. Brummel didn't make it due to the heat and that almost all of the faculty have been infected. So the students are up next. Nurse Harper enters and she apparently has not yet been infected, but here it comes. So Delilah and Casey watch as the coach holds her down. He becomes all veiny in the face before something comes out of his mouth and goes into her ear.
Just stay out of the ears, man. It gets me every time. I get so upset.
That would be the worst wet willy ever, really.
And the whole time, Mrs. Olson just stands there and watches. So Delilah is freaking out, understandably. I will give her that. And she accidentally bumps into the body of Mrs. Brummel, which has been hidden in the closet.
Okay, so this portion totally reminded me of Chunk in the freezer in The Goonies, when he's like, it's a stiff! Anyway, that was all I could think of.
The coach hears them making noise because they're panicking. And as he's about to open the door, Casey comes out and rams him with a broom. So Casey and Delilah make it out into the hall where they run into the history teacher, Mr. Tate, and Principal Drake. They tell them the coach and Mrs. Olson have attacked Nurse Harper. But of course, they're all infected. And this scene where they're basically caught between the principal and the one teacher and then Mrs. Olson and the coach and now Nurse Harper, it's intense. Like they're like literally in between them. And the principal just has this kind of smile on her face. And she's, I don't even know how to describe it. It's not a menacing smile, but it definitely makes you uncomfortable. So they run. Casey goes home. He tells his parents. They get the police involved. But it's not going to end up the way that Casey thinks that it will. So they check out the closet. Of course, doesn't have Mrs. Brummel's body anymore. Oh, no, you mistook resuscitation Annie as Mrs. Brummel. Ugh.
Yeah, the gaslighting is just like next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Olympic level. But what about the attack on Nurse Harper, he says. Well, that is conveniently explained away as an epileptic seizure. And the principal tells the one police officer, you can call Nurse Harper from the phone in my office. It is time to take the infection out of the school.
Who is Joel from Scream 2, the cameraman?
Oh my gosh, I knew I recognized him from something.
Yes.
Joel. He should have applied his common sense in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
As Casey is leaving the lounge, Coach Willis taunts him, saying, you have some speed. There's lots of chasing on the field.
Meanwhile, Delilah outran him in platform slip-ons and left him in the dirt. So, not so speedy. Maybe he should have recruited Delilah.
But Casey's dad takes it as a compliment and is all like, yeah, hear that, son? You could be a jock after all. Casey's mom thinks that he needs to see a psychiatrist, and she apologizes to Miss Drake. Miss Drake's like, oh, come in and chat in my office, like alone. We could talk about this. But Casey's like, I'll see the doctor, Mom. Let's go. So they head home. Mom and Dad tear Casey's room apart looking for drugs. He's trying to convince him that something is wrong, but instead he gets grounded. So no phone, no internet, no music, no boob magazine.
Boob singular. That was my favorite.
Casey decides he's going to sneak out his window, but he sees three of the teachers watching on the sidewalk. So he tumbles off the roof and they approach. But as he gets up, he turns into his dad. He doesn't actually turn into his dad. I mean, he turns and runs into his dad.
I was like, did I miss something?
Freaky Friday.
Speaking of Jamie Lee Curtis, the teachers are gone, but Casey's plan to sneak out has been foiled. So the next day, Casey returns to school. He almost immediately runs into Delilah, who is in the worst disguise ever. Glasses and a ponytail.
We also, well, I just wanted to bring up too that in Casey's room, he had pictures of Delilah hanging on his
wall
that he had taken. It was a little creepy.
Had a little shrine going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, problematic romance and, like, romance in quotations, but she says we should go to the police, but Casey's like, they have the police, and it is the use of, I love the infamous they. They have the police. Casey's like, they're a death cult, or they worship comets or something, and that doesn't really line up with what he himself has seen, but that's okay. I mean, I don't know that I would recognize an alien invasion for what it was. In the teacher's lounge, the coffee machine sits neglected and sad. Like, they focus on that coffee machine to be, look, the teachers aren't drinking coffee. There is clearly something wrong. Instead, they are guzzling water. And we even get this amplified sound of somebody gulping water, which is hilarious. In class, Mary Beth encourages Stokely physically at one point to talk to Stan. Like, she literally pushes her into Stan. She's really pushy for a new girl.
Yeah.
Stan tells Stokely that he quit the football team, and he gets the response that he should have got from his girlfriend, Delilah, because he just wants somebody to listen to him, which Stokely does, and she kind of sympathizes with him. Mary Beth, meanwhile, wants to make some headway with Zeke, so she asks him about his drug pens, and we learn that she is allergic to aspirin, so drugs off the table for her. Weird things are happening at the school. Kids are being called to the principal's office. The nurse is giving ear exams. There is a mandatory meeting for the presidents of the school's clubs. It is a lot. So Zeke has started to notice the weird stuff that's going on. And Mary Beth's like, oh, you all just seem weird to me because I'm from the South. The two students that Zeke sold fake IDs to at the beginning of the movie show up and ask him to sell them all of his supply of scat. And they're very persistent. They're like, got any more in your locker at home? Miss Burke at this point shows up and she has been transformed. She's wearing this hot red tank top, fitted black pants. She's lost the glasses. Her hair is flowing. She is stunning. And she's also found her nerve because when Zeke tells her he has zero tolerance that day, she fires back, even calling him a dickless, drug-induced excuse for a human being.
Damn.
I mean, there are some really good insults and comebacks in this movie.
But can you imagine a teacher now saying that to a student? You're dickless. Like, oh.
I mean, I don't think she would be a teacher very long.
No.
No.
No. Casey is sharing his experiences with Stokely at this point, who likens the situation to Invasion of the Body Snatchers. She's joking, but Casey is like, bingo, because all fiction is based on some truth, right? And she has this nerd moment about sci-fi where she kind of talks about, you know, different sci-fi writers and like the plots of certain novels. And Casey says, maybe the X-Files are right. And he goes down the rabbit hole a little further, saying that maybe all those sci-fi folks are aliens and they're getting us ready for the inevitable takeover. At this point, Stokely, Stan, Delilah, and Casey meet up and they head to the science lab where the new species is missing. Casey's like, aliens are taking over the school, but Stan is not convinced. Meanwhile, Zeke and Mary Beth are right next door, raiding the science lab supply closet for scat supplies. I really wish they'd come up with a different name for the droid.
It's such a bad name. Well, you know that like they desperately wanted to call it Coke and then were like, oh, we can't because we don't want an R rating. And like, honestly, like there had to have been better fake names. You're right. Like there had to have been better fake drug names.
Yeah.
Than scat. So bad.
So awful. Zeke and Mary Beth start to make out before they hear the other group talking about the alien invasion through the vents. And Casey has a good point when he says the smart move for the aliens would be to sneak in through the back door, not go all Independence Day style. The references in this movie, like when you like things like they talk about the X-Files, they talk about Independence Day. Some of them are a little dated now. And I don't know if somebody watching this movie for the first time would be like,
I mean, Independence Day is a national treasure. So
fair. Fair.
You need to know that one.
Zeke and Mary Beth enter the room and Zeke is pretending that he is bent over in agonizing pain. At this point, Mr. Furlong interrupts and Zeke tells him that Casey thinks he's an alien, which is just a bad move.
Yeah, way to show your hand.
Yeah, right? Furlong closes the blind on the door and he tells them that he sent the specimen to the university before he just starts attacking. Luckily, Zeke is a beast because, you know, Stokely may have been called a beast, but Zeke is the beast. And he manages to rip the blade off of a paper cutter and he attacks Mr. Furlong with it. He cuts off the fingers on one of Furlong's hands and they scurry across the floor.
Meanwhile, those paper cutters could never even cut through paper. So I'm not quite sure
100%
how much force you would have had to use to cut off those fingers.
I mean, have you ever had Josh Hartnett wielding one of those paper cutters when you're trying to cut paper?
No, but
that's a good point.
Come over anytime.
Josh, it's for science. Okay, Josh. We need to know for science.
He throws Zeke to the ground and tendrils are coming out of his finger stumps and a slug-like tongue is protruding from his mouth. At this point, Zeke stabs him in the eye with a scat-filled pen.
Got it.
I hate it too. It's fine. It's terrible.
It's so bad. They continue to struggle. Mr. Furlong has the pen sticking out of his eye before it begins to froth and he begins to convulse. It's nasty, but Furlong appears to be dead. Casey, smart boy that he is, has grabbed some proof and they get the fuck out of there. In their words, as they walk through the halls, we now see how infected the school is. The students are basically all pod people. Even the couple that we've seen fighting throughout the movie, the fuck you boy and fuck you girl. Is that what they were called?
Yes. Christian? And fuck you girl is Joaquin Phoenix's sister, I feel, in River Phoenix.
Oh.
Yes. Yes. Summer Phoenix. Yeah. That's right. But they're all lovey dovey. Like she's like holding him and everybody's just peaceful. And yet everybody seems very sinister. It does that classic walk through the crowd where you see people looking at you and it just seems like they're like not just looking at you. They're like watching you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Things have clearly progressed outside of the school. The police have set up roadblocks. There are no radio signals coming through as Zeke tries to find somebody talking about what's going on. And they head to Zeke's house where he has a fully stocked lab ready to go. And we learn Zeke's ingredient, his secret ingredient for scat is caffeine pills.
But like, that's a lot of pills to crush up to fill those pens. So yeah. I would stop a heart. Like, I don't know what else in there, but like.
Well, he says other household products. Like, what other household products are in that?
Baking powder? I don't know.
Maybe. He starts to work on the slug. He cuts off a tiny piece of it before putting it into his mouse's cage. And he drips water on it. The slug grows tendrils that enter that poor little mouse. We see movement under the mouse's skin, and Zeke kills the poor mouse. This was like the hardest part of the movie for me to watch.
Yeah. Honestly, same. Yeah, I got so upset.
And then he dissects the mouse. So sure enough, he says, we're dealing with a parasite which can control its host, and it's actually part of a larger organism. The parasite dries out the host, which is why they drink so much water. The drug is a diuretic, Zeke says, which is actually not the correct use of the word diuretic, Zeke. I'm very disappointed in you, but that's okay. We'll let it go. That's why Mr. Furlong died the way he did. It dried him out. So they look to Stokely for answers. And she says, if they kill the master, everyone else should become human again. Delilah just wants to get out of town, but Casey insists they have to stay and fight. So this kicks off a bout of paranoia, very, very reminiscent of The Thing. So they're like, how do we know you're really you? And they all start pointing out each other's personality changes and other things that make them suspicious. I love when Delilah asks Casey, when did you become Sigourney Weaver?
Yes.
So good. And Zeke comes up with the idea of a drug test to make sure none of them are aliens, because we know what scat does to the aliens. So again, this is a callback to The Thing where they did the blood test. So the guys and Stokely, they take the drugs, resulting in the guys getting really, really giggly. Like Elijah Wood being like, tweak, tweak, tweak.
Oh, God.
And the best line in the movie is in these scenes where he's just like, he's fucking tweaking. Just let him tweak. Or
yeah, because Stan becomes very suspicious of what's going on with Casey. Delilah and Mary Beth are the holdouts. And Mary Beth's like, I'm allergic. I can't. But Zeke insists, Mary Beth, Delilah, they both slowly raise their pens to their nose. Mary Beth snorts hers, but Delilah tosses hers away before revealing herself as infected.
Bum, bum, bum. I mean, like, you had to know one of them was. Did you guys have ideas of who you thought it would be?
I don't recall.
Yes.
And were you right?
Yes.
I don't know that I did. I don't know that – I think I probably wanted it to be Delilah because I hate her so much.
Right. Because she's the worst.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Delilah manages to escape as the others argue over what to do with her. And the hive brain is clearly in full effect because there is a car waiting outside for her. I also love that it is a driving instructor car.
Mr. Tate.
Is it Mr. Tate? I tried to figure out who it was today.
I think it was Mr. Tate. And also I was looking at his Wikipedia, which is kind of sad, so maybe don't. But did you know he was only in like 3 episodes of Seinfeld? And he'll forever be Mr. Krueger to me. 3 episodes.
Really? Only 3 episodes.
That's
what a legacy. Yeah.
So when do you think Delilah was infected?
Had to be the night after the school, because when she started wearing her glasses and stuff. I feel like everyone changed their appearance and like changed a little bit, right? And that's how she changed. I don't know. Correct me if you think I'm wrong.
No, that's when I think it was too. Like, and also like they couldn't get a hold of her.
Right.
So it makes sense. I also thought the second time I watched it this week, I considered the fact that maybe it's in the science lab, because at one point Mary Beth grabs her and moves her away to safety.
Oh, yeah.
And the camera goes off of them. So it could be that, but I still think that it was the, I still think that it was the
like off camera the night of.
Yeah. Also, because when you think about it, why would they be turning on each other if they are both of the same pod mind?
True.
Right.
Right.
So part of the problem is that Delilah has also absconded with most of Zeke's supply. So this is going to complicate their plan to kill the queen. But it is Friday night in a football town, so where do you go? You go to the big game. And the Hornets are crushing and infecting their rival team. So I mentioned it earlier, but Robert Patrick's reactions to the game are just delightful. Like, I love the joy on his face as he watches this.
Yeah, as he watches Usher clothesline a kid to death. Like, some wild.
Now, was Usher already, or was he... Yeah. Because I meant to look it up, and I totally didn't. He was already, like, yeah-ing his way through the Grammys.
Yeah, and I think this was, like, his theatrical debut or something.
Got it.
I think Yeah came out later, but let's see.
But his first album must have come out in, like, I would say 94 or 95.
His first album came out in 94.
Yeah.
You are correct. And then he had a second album in 97.
Okay, so he was, like, you know... On the radar or whatever.
He had his first U.S. Billboard Hot 100 number one single, Nice and Slow. And he also had You Make Me Wanna and My Way. I don't know either of those songs.
But you Make Me Neither. Wanna.
He's the one I'm with. Start a new relationship with
oh,
you.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah, you know that one.
Yeah, you do.
100%. Oh, my God. That's a bop.
Right?
That is a total bop. Yeah. I just didn't know it by name.
The kids have decided that the principal must be the queen. So the plan is to get rid of her. And they're inside the gym. The gym has these streamers coming down that resemble the alien tendrils. And as our heroes meet there, the principal enters. Zeke and Stan take her down. They wrap her in a volleyball net. And with almost literally a gun to her head, Casey tells her to sniff the scat.
Sniff this or he shoots you.
She refuses to, so Casey says he'll furlong her, which she doesn't know what that means, and he doesn't actually say that, but that's basically. She's quite convincing as she pleads with Casey, but Zeke isn't taking any chances, and he shoots her in the head.
Oh, there's no
going yeah, and now, that. Did anyone, like, have a moment where they were like, did those kids just kill a
human? Yes. Mm-hmm. I thought for sure it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Even when she was like, Casey, are you on drugs? Like, yeah. You could see that Casey was wavering. He's like,
So Casey thinks they made a mistake. He approaches her body as blood is spreading on the floor below her. But of course, she pops back up and slugs start crawling out of the hole in her head. It's disgusting. Mary Beth reacts quickly, throwing almost all of the remaining scat at her, which you think she's just panicking, but it turns out she has an ulterior motive.
Yeah.
And her shriveled up, dried out corpse is gross.
Yes.
Stan's like, I'll go out. I'll see if it worked. He takes a pen's worth of scat with him. And as he's about to leave the gym, Stokely finally makes her move and kisses him.
Ooh la la.
Mm-hmm. Stan heads to the field. He sees the coach and the team. They are just standing on the field, standing in the rain. But bad news, it didn't work because the coach and the football team are gazing up into the sky, tendrils and teeth exposed, soaking in all that rain. So the others are waiting for him back in the gym, and he suddenly slams up against the door, telling Stokely to let him in. And he's like, it wasn't Drake, it's the coach. And Zeke's like, prove you're not infected. Use the pen I gave you. But supposedly he lost it. So Casey puts the last pen under the door. Stan puts the pen to his nose before slowly looking up, and that look on his face.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He then dumps out the scat as Stokely looks on. And this part, she's crushed. Aww. He's like, it's better. Everything is beautiful. You'll be beautiful. And he definitely knows the right buttons to push before he just loses it.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells her that they've already won. So now what? How much scat does Zeke have?
Right? Like, it just keeps coming.
He's got more out in his car, he says. But that seems like a bad idea that they have to go out into the parking lot. But it's really their only option at this point. So Zeke and Casey head out to the parking lot where they run into the football team, Stan back amongst them wearing his jersey again. And we learn that Casey is supposed to be the decoy while Zeke gets to his car.
You couldn't even outrun Delilah.
Let alone a football team. Yeah, it's true. Hiding on a school bus, Casey sees Delilah, who tells him that she hasn't been this happy since her dad died. So, okay. Hurt people. I get it. I feel bad for everything I said about Delilah, except I still don't.
No, she sucks. It's fine.
Yeah, the one time she was ever human is after she's an alien.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. The football team has surrounded the bus, and when one of them crashes his head through a window, Casey has no option but to go up through the emergency exit. So Zeke has made it to his car, and as he's searching through his trunk, Miss Burke shows up, downright inappropriate, telling Zeke that she's looking for something cherry-flavored.
Good Lord.
Dirty. What got me was the chronology of them splitting up and Josh Hartnett getting to his car is insane. Because he sees his car, and it's like 30 feet away, and then it takes him all of Elijah Wood running around, getting on a bus, getting on top of a bus, getting off of a bus to get to his car that was like 2 seconds away. I was like, what is happening? Like, I turned to George. I was like, he's still not there yet? Like, where is, what is he been doing?
I just wanted to take a leisurely walk, like, take it all in. What's going on?
Like Elijah Wood, like, did all of this, had a full fucking conversation with evil Delilah, and got up onto a bus roof and off of a bus roof. All of that. And then Josh finally gets to his car.
That's true.
Yeah, and the coach is telling him he's fast. He's not fast.
No.
After a bit of banter, he hops in his car and he tries to speed away, but she is holding on and gets into the back seat. So safety first, Zeke puts on his seatbelt before speeding up and crashing into the side of a school bus, ejecting Miss Burke violently from the car. And you actually see her bounce a couple of times. Jesus. In the flames. Oh, that's great. He manages to pull himself from the wreck. He's got a few pens in his hand before he sees her head slither by in another little nod to the thing.
Did this remind anyone also of, now this is like really stupid because it's obviously a nod to the thing, but did anyone else, like, I got reminded of that. This is so dumb. That baby toy in Toy Story. That's all I could think of.
Oh no.
Which, like, it's not related, but like, that was where my brain went.
So there's this person in Saskatoon that clearly has like a 3D printer, and they'll always like post things that they're selling made from this 3D printer on like Marketplace or whatever. They made a rocktopus. So it's the Rock's head with like octopus legs. And that's
that
all
sounds Crystal horrifying. And also I want it.
Yes, I want one too.
Oh my God.
The only thing we could think of in that scene.
My secret Santa at work gave me one, so I'll send you a picture of it.
Oh my God, I can't wait to see that. Your secret Santa at work knows you well.
I need a tattoo of the rocktopus. That's what I need.
Yes, do it.
She does manage to reunite her head with her body, and at which point Zeke deeks out of there. So Stokely and Mary Beth are having a heart-to-heart in the gym, and Mary Beth asks, what happens at the end of those sci-fi books you like so much? And Stokely says, they win, we lose. Mary Beth makes the case that maybe it's all for the best, and really, we do win. Stan didn't look unhappy, she reminds Stokely. Mary Beth is sounding very pro-infestation at this point.
Yeah.
And then we find out why, as she reveals herself, punching Stokely before transforming into her badass alien queen self. How does that big alien fit in that little tiny body?
Right.
Casey has just entered the gym, and he and Stokely take off running through the building. Unfortunately for them, they enter the pool next because, remember, these are sea-dwelling creatures, so we know that Mary Beth could have been on the swim team.
They're pelagic.
They're pelagic. Well, and also, like, George pointed out while we were watching this, he was like, how does the chlorine...
Yes,
not too, get them.
That would dry them out, for sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, well, and to which I said, well, if they've been infiltrating... We don't know how long they've been infiltrating for. Like, maybe they stopped putting chlorine in the pool. But then that led us to be like, well, how long does it take for chlorine to, like, work its way out of a pool? Mm. And we are not pool owners or pool experts. So that's where that conversation ended.
Well, I have one on speed dial if we want to call them in.
Let's phone a friend.
Yeah. That's an alien.
So she manages to ensnare Stokely and drag her into the pool.
Oh, when her face hits that tile.
When her face hits that tile, oh my God.
That's why there's no running in the pool. You can't run at the pool. Yeah.
It's very true. Stokely does manage to get out of the pool with Casey's help, and they take refuge in the locker room. Zeke has managed to make it to the locker room, where he is now torn between Stokely and Mary Beth, each insisting that the queen is the other girl. I mean, the fact that Mary Beth is naked should be a huge clue. But
yeah. Right. Like, yeah. And it takes him way too long to ask where you're, like, where are your clothes or why are you naked? Whatever he asks. I'm like, you're a teenage boy. Like, wouldn't that be the first thing out of your mouth? Yeah.
You're naked.
So he does eventually come to the conclusion that she is the alien. And when he's like, where are your clothes, Mary Beth? And we get this little flashback to the test where we see that Mary Beth was able to cover her nostrils with some kind of membrane, and then her finger transformed into this finger-like appendage that removed the bottom of the pen, emptying it of the drug. So that's how she was able to.
As much as I love this movie, that scene where they took the drugs over, some huge continuity errors. Like, when they hand her the pen, there was no cap on it. Then the cap was on. Then the cap was still on when she pretended to snort it. So, like, at what point did you remove the cap, you liar? Anyway.
You liar. Zeke raises his hand to pen her, but it's all been a ruse. Stokely is infected as well, and she grabs his hand, holding him back. Casey, though, has come up from behind her and manages to throw her into the equipment locker. Again, a nice little Buffy reference because, you know, they like to throw people in the locker at the library.
Hell yeah.
Zeke forces Casey to sniff some more scat, which, you know, fair. I think he's been burned enough by now. Mary Beth tosses Zeke over the lockers, knocks him out. He is done. It is now up to Casey to save the day. So we learn a little bit of Mary Beth's backstory. She stalks him and she's like, my world was perfect until it started to dry up. Now she wants to share her perfect world with all of them, a world where you can be what you want to be. And she really preys on their vulnerability. So she talks about, you know, the jock can be this, the smart kid, and the nerdy kid can be the hero. But Casey says he'd rather be afraid before she's like, fine, this is where your world of fiction gets it right. We win. So Casey runs back into the gym and in a stroke of pure genius, uses the mechanical bleachers to trap Mary Beth.
Yeah, that's amazing. And like, we had those in our school too, mm-hmm. but like, I wouldn't have known what end they would have started on or how to turn them on or do anything without like low key killing myself. Like, yeah.
And they for sure have sensors in them, right? Like they would have to.
I mean, it was the 90s.
But yeah, that was like, I'm sure they do now, but like, I don't know.
We weren't big on occupational health and safety in the 90s.
Fair.
How he manages, though, to not trip over all the beams behind the bleachers, like the steel and stuff, I will never understand because I would have been down the first one I had to jump over. They're almost face to face when he takes out three pens of scat that he raided from Zeke's unconscious body and says,
guaranteed to jack you up.
And he stabs them into her eye.
Oh, it's so good.
She spits slugs at him. And I think this is probably one of the grossest scenes of the movie. Oh, her eye is frothing and foaming. Yeah. He has slugs sticking out of his face.
Wiggling. Oh,
it's so nasty. But their theory is correct, and the slugs all die as she dies. Casey heads back to the equipment locker. He finds Stokely coming too, and back to her non-alien self. There is a little bit of a jump scare when Zeke crashes into the locker, but he is also okay. And then we flash forward. It is 1 month later, and life has returned to normal at Harrington High. Well, mostly normal, because we're told that life has returned to normal by a newscaster, and the last scenes of the movie are filled with reporters. Zeke is now on the football team.
What? Why?
Like, how does that even fit?
Not at all.
It doesn't. Also, he's like 35 at this point, isn't he? Like, what's
definitely an alien.
He has an admirer in the bleachers. Yes, Miss Burke is fully attached again, back in a cardigan and waving shyly at him. How did she survive? I get that the slugs died, but she had her head removed.
Yeah.
Speaking of cardigans,
uh-huh.
What is up with Stokely?
Her nice sweater set for a care of Tommy Hilfiger.
Right? Totally.
Well, was it like this movie, not sponsored, but wasn't it like part of a big campaign for Tommy Hilfiger? Yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah.
He did the entire wardrobe and then the cast had to like do commercials for them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like to show that like now she has love in her life. She's out of black clothes and like,
yeah. So now she's conforming. Like the whole point.
Yeah.
Anyways,
it misses the mark there, I think.
Casey, meanwhile, is a media sensation. He is featured on the cover of Time magazine with the headline "Hero or Hoax," as well as on the school paper. And that's the end of the movie because I'm not going to talk about Casey and Delilah now being a couple.
Thank you.
That was so fucking out of left field and like didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Well, he's famous now, so of course she wants to bone him.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
Okay, so what made this a fun? I'm not going to argue that it's a great movie, but it is a fun movie. So what would you say made this a fun watch for you?
I mean, the nostalgia of the 90s is like it's that's strong. You know, like the fashion. That was the first thing that George said when we were watching it, when he was like, oh, but we do miss the fashion. I was like, do we? I was like, we don't. I was like, we don't. But you know, there's like a lot of nostalgia going on, and I just like the classic, you know, kids against, like, kids have to save the world. An unlikely group of teenagers is thrown together to save the world. I mean, it's great. So, like, it's a trope that works for a reason.
I think, just like I said before, like, I just felt like everybody in this movie was having so much fun. Yeah. And I don't know, that's what I loved. And yeah, just all the Easter eggs that are, like, planted in the movie referencing other things. I also, like, talking about Final Girls at the beginning of the movie, I actually read a review where somebody said Elijah Wood was the ultimate Final Girl in the 90s fight.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh my gosh, yes.
He is Sigourney Weaver.
Yes.
He's the one that first figures out that something's wrong and, like, kind of, like, digs through everything going on to, like, come up with a plan and stuff. So, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Crystal?
Well, Tommy Hilfiger, no Randy River, but the wardrobe was incredible. The writing, fantastic. Blow me, blood fart, fuck you, tit bags. What else? There were just so many good lines. The cast was great. T-1000, love him.
Yeah, so
Josh
great.
Josh Hartnett.
The cast was just stacked.
Yeah, it was huge. And it was just, yeah, a really, really fun movie. Like, it knew what it was. Like I had said, I just feel like Rodriguez and Williamson are just, like, movie dorks. And anything that either of them do, it always just comes off as, like, you just kind of see their love of movies. Mm. So that's yeah. always kind of fun when they throw back to, like, The Thing or, mm-hmm. or, like, yeah, I don't know. Just things like that. I just really appreciate it. Like you said, it's not going to win any awards, but I probably watch it, I don't know, every other year, if not once a year. I always like this one.
And everyone knew what movie they were in.
100%.
Which yeah.
is totally. So useful and, like, doesn't always happen. Especially when you get these, like, campy kind of movies. Like, some people take it too seriously and some people don't take it seriously enough. But, like, everybody from, like, you know, Jon Stewart all the way to Usher to Elijah Wood. Like, they, I mean, everybody knew, like, what they were.
Right.
What movie they were in.
Did Josh, oh my gosh, Josh Hartnett, is this where the fashion for, like, the long sleeve under the t-shirt came from, or was that already a thing, or did he start that trend?
Oh, that's your question.
I feel like it was already there to begin with.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I probably didn't start doing that until 10th grade, and that probably would have been just after this movie came out. So maybe
you know what we didn't talk about though?
His hair.
We didn't talk about his hair.
It was so bad.
It was so bad. And I read that he actually had cut his hair himself.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I wish I would have like kept that quote, but yeah, I was like, what? Is he being serious? But I do think he was being serious. Oh, yeah, I do have the quote. He said, I never really liked going to the barber, so I cut it myself. That's how it turned out. I had that haircut God. When I went in for auditions.
Jesus.
And they said, let's keep that.
Yes, keep it, please.
Let's keep that. Oh, God.
I mean, it worked, I guess.
I guess. I'm actually Googling short shirt over long shirt, but I can't seem to find anything beyond the 90s. So I feel like Kurt Cobain did it before, like, Josh.
Oh,
Hartnett.
Yeah. You know what? That's true. Right. And that would have been probably, what, like 3-4 years before that?
Yeah. I mean, I'll break out my, like, you know, elder Gen X knowledge. The one thing I also really liked, I liked that it was kind of because, you know, high school movies often focus on the, like, social roles that teenagers kind of fall into. And I liked that it kind of used this as, we're going to make everybody conform. Everybody's going to be the same. Mm-hmm. But the thing that actually saves them is their individual differences. And that, like, the fact that they use an illegal drug to, like,
yeah,
to do it. Like, I don't know. I thought that was good. And I liked that they kind of formed these little alliances, even though, like, very Breakfast Club, but mm-hmm. even though I hate the way some of those alliances ended in
the movie. Right. Mm-hmm.
If you could add one song from the 90s to the soundtrack, what would it be?
Oh, man.
Speaking about Nirvana, like Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Good choice.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
All I can think about is It's the End of the World as We Know It.
Oh, yeah.
By R.E.M.
Oh, that'd
yeah,
be good.
I know. See, that was also in Independence Day, though.
Yeah.
That's okay. So I don't know if that means it's, like, you know, been done. But I feel like it's such a good one.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I'm, like, looking up my 90s playlist on Spotify just to get inspired. I can't think of anything. Probably something by Usher, I guess.
Yeah, that's actually...
Oh, that would have been good. Yeah.
Or my own Worst Enemy. I mean, that would be a good one, too.
Yes. Yeah.
Love that one. Love. Yeah, you guys, 90s rock and alternative is just, like, oh, my fave.
Yes. So good. I thought I was so smart at the end of the movie because I was like, oh my God, their team is called the Hornets and she was a queen bee and they had to kill her.
Oh my God.
I will. Okay. So I did find a picture of Kurt Cobain wearing a short sleeve shirt over a long sleeve shirt. But I did also find a picture of Judd Nelson from The Breakfast Club wearing the exact same
shirt. Oh,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I guess
so. I guess it's even older than the 90s, which is crazy to me. Okay, so body count. So Valerie Drake, I'm pretty sure, is dead. The principal, I'm sure.
Yeah, they couldn't bring that back.
Mrs. Brummel is dead. Miss Burke is clearly not, so because we see her in the bleachers. And also, if you watch the credits, you see Mr. Furlong with an eye patch right. and one of his hands bandaged. So it seems like he somehow lived.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Zeke's mouse. Sacrificed for the greater good.
How many scaredy cat screams would you give the movie? On a scale of 1 through 5, just how much you enjoyed the movie, not necessarily how scary it was.
I'll give it a 4. It didn't stick the landing, but it's a super fun watch. And I love it.
I would say like 3.5-ish for me.
Yeah, I would say like a 3.5 or a 4. Like exactly.
What would have made it a 5, do you think? Is there anything that you could pinpoint that would have been like, that would have made it a 5?
The aliens winning.
Yeah. Like, I'm all about, dark. Like, the non-predictable ending. Mm. So I would have loved to see something like that, too.
All right. So tell us where we can find you.
Well, you can find me posting almost exclusively pictures of my cats and now on a cat wheel, my yes. Instagram, at Aria in the City. I am in beginning planning stages of a podcast, but I'll hopefully have more information about that the next time we record. Ooh. So I'll keep you guys posted. And yeah, that's about it.
Love it. I'm on Instagram just as Mixdays. Not really that interesting of an Instagram, but I'll let Crystal kind of plug our podcast. But I do have to say, everybody should follow our podcast Instagram because Crystal is hilarious. She makes like so many of her own memes and it's just, she deserves to have 1 million followers because she's just so funny.
No, yeah. I think it's funny and you think it's funny. I don't know if anyone else does.
I think it's hilarious. I think it's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. We have a lot of fun over there. So you can follow us at The Real Housewives of Saskatoon if you'd like. We did get reposted by the Bravo official TV Instagram, so that was super exciting. But yeah, so you can check us out on Instagram. You can find our podcast anywhere you listen to other podcasts. If you like Real Housewives junk, right now we're doing Real Housewives of New Jersey and the Ultimate Girls Trip, so check us out if you like that kind of thing. Or yeah, I guess my personal is Pizza Party Is Broken on Instagram if you want to see photos I took 8 months ago and posted now because I have nothing going on.
Excellent. Okay, so what's the best Real Housewives franchise?
Oh, I think it's Jersey because it's just yeah. so wild and the dynamic is just so different on there when it first starts because it really is just so like Italian family mobster-ish. But and they don't give a shit about being classy or not, which I love. They just that's the
best. I
need
to watch. I haven't like I was into like the OG yes. Real Housewives of Orange County mm-hmm. when I was in college, but I don't think I've like consistently watched any of the other ones since then.
Yeah.
Oh man. Like, even if you want to dive into one that's like easy to really dive into, Salt Lake City, because it sucks you in right away. It's not.
And there's
so
only
much
two
of, like,
seasons, so it's not a huge catch up.
Yeah.
And okay. It's bonkers.
Mm-hmm. Bonkers. All right, I'm gonna have to check it out. As soon as I finish Love is Blind season two, I'll check that out.
Check it out and let us know who your favorite housewife is on that.
Yes. Perfect.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today. You can catch us on Twitter at @CatScaredy and on Instagram at @ScaredyCats the podcast. Subscribe wherever you find podcasts and don't forget to let us know what you think by leaving us a review. Until next time, stay scared.